This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Doug Van Soos. Doug and his wife, Andrea, have been property buyers since about 2008, and they've done about 400 deals, and they got into wholesaling and property management and keeping properties, and he's really one of the success stories of the business, so glad to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me here.
Prior to getting involved in real estate, you owned a business. What kind of business was that, and where was it?
Yeah, so right after my wife and I got married, we got married in the year 2000, and we had just before that we had read Rich Dad Poor Dad while we were engaged, and you know, as is the story with many people who get in this business, that just completely flipped our mind upside down on what we were doing, and literally 3 months after we got married, we quit our jobs and we opened a kettle corn business.
Okay,
kettle corn popcorn.
Okay,
ever been to
sure.
a fair? You've had
yeah.
kettle corn. Well, at that time it was kind of new novelty. You know, this is the year 2000, and we bought a kettle and a trailer, and we lived in San Diego at the time, and we moved to Colorado and lived in my brother's basement, and we were entrepreneurs, and that was our whole goal. We wanted to work for ourselves and just, you know, start a business and do that, and we absolutely loved it. We did that for about 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where did the entrepreneurial gene come from? I mean, it wasn't entrenched in your family prior to that? This was sort of like an original act?
You know, my wife attributes it to her grandfather.
Okay.
He was always kind of had different businesses and kind of worked for himself and always kind of encouraged that in his, you know, kids and grandkids. And, you know, on my side, I don't know. I just, my family kind of has a family business and they've kind of worked together in that for a while, so I guess that's, you know, in a sense entrepreneurial as well, but I really don't know. It's not like it was taught in school to me growing up or anything like that. We just literally, the book just kind of opened my eyes to, like, I don't really want to work for someone else my whole life.
Okay.
Yeah,
I love when books change lives. That's
yeah,
you know, when somebody writes that kind of a book, that's pretty special. So when did you get involved in real estate?
Well, that kind of lit the fire of real estate kind of in the back of our head, that Rich Dad Poor Dad. So we always kind of knew we wanted to get into real estate at some point, somehow. We didn't really, we did actually buy a rental unit in Albuquerque while we were doing the kettle corn.
Okay.
We just wanted to own some real estate. We wanted to own a rental property, get into real estate. So we actually bought a fourplex. We were benefit of the market at that time as it grew up, and
right.
a year and a half later we sold it.
Okay.
And got a little windfall from that. But it wasn't until we moved back to California and needed to get our feet wet in real estate. So I became a real estate appraiser in 2003, was licensed in 2004.
Okay.
And at that time was just, you know, I mean, there was so much business in real estate. It was booming. There was refis going on, purchases everywhere, so busy. So I spent the next 3 or 4 years just doing full-time appraising.
Okay. Did you own a house at the time?
We bought a house in Murrieta in 2003.
Okay.
Or 2004, excuse me. And then we sold it and bought another brand new house in 2005 in Murrieta.
Okay.
New built. And... super excited about that. And then I guess it was 6 months later, I heard you speak.
Uh-oh.
In spring of 2006. And the news was, this is the first time I'd heard anybody say, you need to sell. Things are going to change in a bad way. And I'm in real estate. I'm an appraiser every day doing this. And this is the first I'd heard that. And kind of scared me. We just bought this brand new home.
Hmm.
And we had a brand new baby, by the way, born
okay.
in that year, spring of 2006. So we weren't going to move again right then. We owned that home until last year. we sold it for a little less than we bought it for even then.
Wow.
But we hung on. We rented it. We ended up buying another house later on when it crashed, and it all worked out.
But you kept it?
We kept it.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. It went from it went from about 500,000 to a year and a half later, about 220.
Yeah.
Right.
A year and a half later.
Maybe 2 years.
Yeah. I think, you know what? To me, that's part of the education that's invaluable. You're not looking at statistics. You lived it. And that you kind of make decisions about, I don't want to live through that again. If I see one of those, you know, I'd make maybe a different decision, you know, this time.
And I guess we were, you know, fortunate enough that we didn't buy a whole bunch right at that time. I mean,
right.
There's no regrets at all. I'm glad we made the purchase. It was a great home. We lived in it for a long time.
Yeah, that's your home. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm fortunate we were able to sell it, you know, recently. So it all worked out good. But yeah, the timing when we actually ended up really buying a lot, was much better. So
yeah, obviously. So what kicked that off? I mean, I didn't know you were an appraiser. So were you seeing values just get crushed, or was there an education? Did you take some training?
So I heard you speak, and that really kind of, you know, really kind of set a fire. We need to be ready for this, and arm ourselves to be ready to buy and sell houses. That's what we always wanted to do.
Okay.
It was still too high at that time, so we just kept educating ourselves, kept reading podcasts. You know, there's a lot of podcasts out there, and I would drive around all day long doing appraisals and just listen to podcasts, you know, about real estate investing.
Okay.
And it wasn't like it was overnight. I mean, it was until 2008 that we actually bought our first house.
Good timing.
It was great timing. And I obviously saw the fall through 2007 and 8 and kind of lived that and felt like, yep, it's time to really dive in. And so in 2008 is when we really got serious about trying to buy our first, you know, quote unquote investment, flip property. And that's what we did.
I kind of wondered if you were... Did you get into it with the idea that we're going to flip, or was the idea to keep from the beginning?
So at that time, it was to flip.
Okay.
Yeah. I was working 70, 80 hours a week appraising.
Wow.
I mean, it was early in the morning, late at night, writing reports, driving around forever. Wasn't something I wanted to do, you know, indefinitely.
Right.
So the goal, even with appraising, was always to get into real estate. That's just what we wanted to do. We wanted to get into flipping houses. We did want to own rental properties long-term. That was our long-term goal. But in 2008, I mean, it was still falling.
Yes.
It was falling dramatically.
It was hard to flip properties because your appraisal, as you know, was hard to prove a value, even though you had a crowd of people want to take it off your hands.
Very hard. I mean, all your comps were just, you know, REOs and short sales. And I mean, it was a difficult time. So we were really, really conservative on all of our offers, which is, looking back, was great because we didn't want to make a big mistake on our first investment. But it took us 9 months of just making offers off the MLS day in and day out before we finally got a yes answer.
9 months before yes answer.
Yeah.
And you had a living months. Doing something else.
Right.
In
the
meantime.
I was still appraising. Andre actually had a real estate license as well.
That's a good story, though. So. I mean, because sometimes, you know, when you end up successful, people think, yeah, they just, you know. Right out of the gate.
It just happened.
Yeah.
No, it was a lot of thought and work and education on our part. I mean, I'm sure it happens faster for some people, but it really didn't for us. It was just something that we were, you know, determined to make work.
When you listen to all these different opinions, you'd run across different business plans too. So I think I was affected by how I started. You know, I was interested in flipping, and it was really hard for me to be converted to a keep guy because I'd go, okay, well, wait a minute. I can sell this and come home with 25 grand, or I can keep it and come home with 120 a month.
Yeah, right.
And it's just like, yeah.
And, you know, and it's funny because even today when we go, each new acquisition that we get, I kind of try to look at it through both lenses. All right. You know, is this one better for a paycheck, you know, a right away paycheck? Do we need that for something, or is that going to move us forward in some way? Or is this one better in the other category? We can hold on to this and it's going to provide us income for years to come. So we still analyze each one that way. But yeah, at the time, you know, we wanted
to quit your
money.
Job. So
yeah, we wanted to quit our job and get going on that. So that's
okay.
What we did.
You are a married couple in the business, which isn't common. So how did you guys figure out who's going to do what?
Yeah, that's a good question. People ask us that a lot. And fortunately, that's all we've known is working together since we've been married. Yeah. You know, 3 months after we got married, we worked together since then. And we really are a true partnership.
But, yeah. You seem like you guys really have, I don't know, a good team.
Yeah.
Like a great team.
And I, you know, if it was into us individually, we may not be doing this. I don't know. Cause it's been, we've been fortunate to be that encouragement to each other. When somebody's, you know, down, the other person lifts them up and kind of says, keep going. We can do this.
Okay.
But it just took, maybe a couple of years of really kind of figuring out what we were best at within the business and what we liked doing. And really the key to that was just talking about it to each other. I really don't like, you know, doing the books. Can we get someone else to do that? Yes. You know, and that just keeps you enjoying what you're doing and also keeps you in the lane of where your skills are. So
what do you think your best skill is in the business?
My skill revolves around acquisitions and analyzing the properties. I think that came from my background in appraising.
Sure.
Comfortable with it. I feel like I know the numbers really well. I enjoy it. Enjoy analyzing a deal, you know, whether it's going to be a rental or a flip and what that could look like. So that's where I settled in that role.
Okay.
And it's transitioned over the years. You know, early on, we bought only bank-owned homes and it was... There was some relationship there with agents and things, but it was mostly kind of just all numbers and run the numbers and speed.
Sure.
And that has transitioned to now you're sitting across the table with, you know, a person who owns a rental that
Absolutely.
Just had an eviction and kind of dealing with a person. So I felt like that was my strength and that's where I've settled in. Andrea, she's an interior designer, so she has settled in the role of the actual fixing of the properties and designing them and choosing what, you know, what goes in the house and dealing with the contractors. She really enjoys that aspect of it, the transformation of the house itself. And she's really good at it. So that's kind of where she's settled in. And it works well.
Okay. About 2011 and beyond, you started really gathering rentals. So what was the... Did you all of a sudden you had enough flipping money that the livelihood wasn't a big deal? Now you were going to pursue the bigger picture?
I don't know if that was it. The real key, honestly, was your long-term rental program that you came out with. That allowed us to get financing that was relatively painless, understood. It was geared for people like us who wanted to acquire rentals. Didn't want to go through the pains of trying to get a bank loan every time.
Well, you'd have been limited, obviously, the number for sure.
Yeah, we'd have been limited to 4 or maybe 10, depending on how that went.
Yeah.
And, you know, we didn't have the cash to just buy every house that we wanted to. So we were able to leverage using your rental program. And that was really the catalyst that allowed us to acquire the numbers that we were able to get.
Okay. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, it really is true. There just wasn't much available for in terms of financing that we could find at that time, and it really met a need.
Yeah, at the time I think it was still 8 years, right?
That's
8 year
right.
program. Yeah, and it was under 10%, so people thought we were crazy.
Yeah
exactly. Yeah, it was an 8 year loan to start off, and
we were able to do that because, you know, we're looking ahead going we're good
right
for a long time. And in the lending business too, when you're lending at a trough, you know, and you're loaning at 60% or 65%, but you know prices are escalate. By the time that loan gets done, it'll be 30 or 35%.
Yeah.
So it's a very safe loan, but it wasn't everybody that could fund it. So that's why that worked. In the early days, you know, we bought a lot of it out of the MLS. The relationships with the realtors, was that vital? And how has that changed?
Yeah, definitely. And we didn't have as many relationships that really benefited us like I think we could have. If this cycle comes around again and we do this again, I'll focus much more heavily on the relationships with these REO brokers. We just focused on making offers initially, just as many as we could. And just through that, kind of organically, you get to know some of these brokers that are controlling the homes because... You know, you're sending them sometimes multiple offers a day on different
sure.
properties. And and then once you close, for us anyway, it was just kind of proving yourself that once you close and make it really simple and easy and you're pleasant to deal with, they like you, you know, and you kind of get favor. And sometimes you get that call when one fell out
exactly.
from another escrow and things like that. So that's really a great strategy. I think Tony Alvarez, that was his main
thing.
And it's, you know, it worked for us as well.
Okay. So how has finding deals changed in now 2018?
100% different.
Okay.
Now it's, I don't even look in the MLS anymore. Not that there aren't deals there. I know there are, because I know people still buy out of the MLS, but the margins got so tight that it wasn't a place we enjoyed shopping for deals.
Okay.
So it has been about, 2018? It's been about 5 years now, probably 6 or 7 years maybe, that we started marketing direct to owners.
When you say owners, is it a specific type? Is it a owner-occupant, or is it a guy that owns a rental?
Mostly a guy who owns a rental.
Okay.
Or there's some other, that's where we started, like just an absentee owner out of the title or records.
Okay.
You know, that's going to be somebody who has a rental, whether they intended it to be that way or they ended up with it that way. That's where we started. And of course, as we've grown and learned more, you know, you can niche down a lot more into certain distresses that would, you know, probably be cause for somebody to want to sell.
Such as?
Did you send mailers like, I'm so sorry you got your divorce. Can I buy your house?
Well, that just sounds so harsh. No, but divorce is one. We don't go after that type of list. But, you know, pending foreclosures.
Yeah.
Probate situation, where often it's going to end up in the family member's hands who may or may not know how to deal with that or want to deal with it. But almost always, though, for us anyway, the property is in distress. I mean, the house needs a lot of work. So
you're not going to just pop it in the MLS and have somebody get a loan.
It's going to be an investor who buys it one way or the other,
right?
Because it can't get a loan. So that's 95% of the houses we would buy fall in that category. They need work. They need a lot of repair. And usually the seller just, you know, doesn't want to deal with it. And we can make it an easy transaction for them, so they don't have to go through all the hoops of listing it and things like that.
Yeah. How has your mailer changed, or has it changed over the years?
It has changed. Yep. Just through trial and error.
Okay.
let's see. What we do well is follow directions. So, you know, I think I heard about first heard about mailing and specific mailers from a podcast I was listening to at the time.
Okay.
And I basically just, you know, okay, that one seems to work for him. Let's copy and paste and put our name in there and our you know, mail return address and phone number. And we started off with a postcard. And to be honest, if I would receive this postcard, I would probably throw it in the trash because it looks like junk mail to me. It's just a lot of text, white postcard that kind of tells everything we do in a paragraph. And it works. You know, it works. It's probably not the best, but it worked for us. And we've now transitioned to where we're much more branded, I guess you'd say. We have a company name that, and we're mailing people often 3, 4, 5 times a year, so they're going to be continually getting our mailer, and it's more of a letter now, more personalized, has our logo or, you know, picture.
Yeah, it has a picture of them. I've gotten one.
Yeah, I need to update that. It's a little old.
Were you in trouble, or did you have a bad property?
I was a landlord, so you know what? I've been very impressed though with your branding of it all. You're one of the few investors that I see actually doing that. Do you think that's a benefit or not? Now, mind you, I'm a branding PR guy, so I see that you do the male-female thing. You actually include your picture. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, I get the mail too. We're landlords as well, so we get the postcards and the letters. And see, I noticed the same thing you did. These all look the same. They're all pretty generic. And I've seen this one many times, and now it's from somebody else. And we just needed something to set ourselves apart. We wanted to be able to stand out. And as you get repetitive mail and start to see the same thing, I know these people now, I recognize this name or this picture or whatever it is, it starts to build a little more credibility and a little more trust, we feel, in the marketing. And you know, it costs more money to send mailers, so that's why most investors don't do it, I guess.
I'm just curious to get your opinion. You know, yellow letters 20 years ago was I'll put it this way. I did a job one time where I recreated a website, and a new employee said, I almost didn't come work for you because your website used to be so bad.
Really?
Do you think the current situation, if you don't have a website that looks somewhat decent, people are judging you, and if they get a yellow letter, they're like, that's adorable, but I'm never calling you?
Well, for me, yeah. Yellow letters were kind of, when they first started, we sent out yellow letters too, and it seemed unique, and nobody else was, you know, it looked like a normal handwritten letter that, they did really take the time to write this. But now yellow letters is common, so people know it's just a marketing piece.
And they may or not even change the name on the mailer that they buy.
Yeah, or have a name.
Right.
You know, just call this number. So I think a website's imperative just for credibility for people are searching us. You know, we know it. They're going to search my name. They're going to search my name and then scam right after it. They're going to search our company name and then, you know, reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Those are being searched. So we take our, you know, reputation seriously and try to treat people right and know that they're going to be searching us online. So put the information out there online that they would want to find and that they need to find.
Can I have
our business.
Can I follow up on that one?
Yeah, sure.
One of the things you guys do best is, Andrea, you guys do sick rehabs. They're stunning.
She's amazing.
They're extra. I want to do a radio show with her about how HDTV and Andrea ruined my flip because they're special. They're not just granite countertops.
Right.
So when people are searching and they see your work, do you think a landlord seeing what you do is a benefit that you actually do have a lot of pride of your work and you turn it? Okay.
100%. We get comments all the time. Oh, you know, love what you do. I looked through your slideshows or whatever, you know,
your Instagram and
yeah. And it's not just for that. Also, I kind of feel like at least, especially today, you know, the same granite countertops and kind of plain stuff. Everybody has done that, but buyers, maybe it's because of HGTV or I'm not sure what they want.
It's Chip and Joanna game. Yeah. They've ruined everything.
They want a little something extra. They want like a little bit of uniqueness, a little bit of sizzle, even on a normal track home. Not that it won't sell the other way, but this, we feel helps it sell faster and for a little bit more money.
So what are some of the things that you do for the sizzle?
Well, you have to ask her that. She's not shopping at Home Depot for every vanity. I'll say that.
It's Vantage Design Studio on Instagram. And I don't know if these are inspiration videos or,
So things like that, probably ordered from several different custom sites and they're just unique. I don't know. You don't see that at Home Depot or Lowe's, you know, for your bathrooms, for your kitchens, mm-hmm. for the places that matter. And so she's really good at putting together a nice presentable, you know, she's in the business. She understands what people like and want and that's her gift. You know, she's very creative with that.
Does it have to cost a ton more?
No, not at all. I mean, maybe a little bit more. And it's a little more hassle, maybe, because mm-hmm. you got to, you know, order from separate places and kind of source that. So I don't know how scalable it is if you're going to do 100 flips like that a year.
Right.
But that's not what we do. So it works for us right now.
But you work in markets like the Inland Empire, where I don't think many people think that would work out here because of the price point. But you guys do.
Yeah. And, you know, a small kitchen in a home in Lake Elsinore, you might have to spend an extra $500 on it to make it really look different and custom. And, mm-hmm. and another thing with that is photography. I mean, you got to take excellent photos, not just off your iPhone to put on the MLS. You know, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
The buyers are going to find you on Zillow and
the tall tiebreakers.
Yeah. All tiebreakers.
Yeah, you're winning the tiebreakers because that's people. I think people go online to prevent a trip, not to induce one.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just like, nah.
Swipe for it.
I've got to go see this one.
One of the things that at this conference I was at a couple weeks ago, one of the things that they're going to start doing is changing how people search real estate. And one of them is going to be a Pinterest way. And so instead of looking at a 3-2 with a square footage, you're like, here's my design style. And it's going to start pulling up listings. So I would agree with you. Pictures are going to be more important than people know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
One of the things that we found when Greg started flipping is that he went through what he thought was necessary and then it changed because mm-hmm. he was putting in, you know, certain things and then realizing no one's paying for it and no one cares. And so it kind of changed his model sometimes. And he would look at competitors too. We're at the end of the show and we'll pick it up in the next episode. Doug, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.